First, the Mishnah and Achova on Pei Gimel Amabez. And we're going to start the sugya tonight of Boshes. So the Mishnah says, Hachovel b'chavero chayavalav mishum chamisha devarim. Benezek b'tsar b'rifoy b'sheves u'boshes. So when you assault someone, you're chayav for those five things. For paying for the actual physical damage that you do to him. The Gemara is going to say what that the Mishnah is going to tell you what that is. The pain of the injury, the doctor bill, the lost work, and boshes. And we'll talk about what boshes is. Embarrassment is the typical translation of the term. Benezek ketzed, so how do you figure out how much you pay for the nezek? So, sima es eno, kata es yado, shibra es raglo, rono so ki iluhu eved nimkar b'shuk. So for Nezek, and we're not going to focus much on Nezek, we've done the first couple sugyas we've done. So we're going to focus really tonight on Boshes, but just so you have a familiarity with the Mishnah, with Nezek, you basically take a look at what happened to the guy. You broke his arm, or you know, you did something, you chopped off his arm, you chopped off his leg, and you say, okay, so how are we going to pay back for that damage? Well, in the way that the Shuma was done, the way that the evaluation was done, is you say, let's say that this guy were on the open slave market, and we were evaluating how much he would be as an Eved who was doing some sort of, let's make it simple, and some sort of physical labor. So how much Eved Kabashuk, how much his value changed? Before, he was a well-heeled, strong guy. Now he's missing an arm. Before, they had paid $1,000 for him. Without the arm, with the healing time, the fact the arm is going to come back or not, in terms of its strength, whatever the difference in the value is what you pay the guy. That's the nezek. Tsar, so how do we do pain? Kavao b'shpud o b'masmer. V'afil atziparno makam sheno osa chabura omdum kama adon kiyotze b'zerot zelita lios mitztayar kach. So for tsar, you say, okay, whatever the injury is, let's take that pain and let's figure out how much a guy would pay, how much you'd have to pay a guy, either to the Gemara deals with it, but how much you would have to pay the guy to endure something like that, or how much the guy would pay to avoid something like that. But it's a matter of how much is that pain worth to him. Refoy, pretty simple. Kao chayev lirfoso. All about smachem im machmas hamaka chayev shalom machmas hamaka potter. So refoy is a doctor bill. So you're chayev to basically make sure that the refoy is done. And if something happens, these wounds come up, these sores come up, wound dehiscence, they call that, happens, and the wound opens up. So then you're chayev if that is because of the maka, not because of the maka, you're potter. Chaisa v'nistra, chayav l'rfoso, chaisa kol tsarko, eno chayav l'rfoso. It's not for us tonight, but if the wound doesn't completely heal, you have to keep paying. If it goes back and forth, kind of improves, then gets worse, you have to continue to pay the refoy until it's totally better. If it completely heals, and then comes back to after it's completely healed, that's a different deal. Sheves rono so ki iluhu shomer kishuin shekvar noslo dume yado v'dume raglo. So sheves, you pay a guy who you injured can't work for the week, so you have to pay him, but you don't necessarily have to pay him for the job that he was doing before. That was the whole sugya we just finished. But to keep it simple, you'll pay him for the job that, let's say, he's going to be able to do after he heals up. So you pay him for the week when he's not working. He's convalescing from head trauma. He's in a bed. When he's done with getting up, he's not going to be an accountant anymore. Now he's going to be a cucumber watcher. So for the week, you pay him as a shomer kishuin. All right, but we're not interested in Sheves tonight either. So far, Refoy, Sheves, Tsar, Nezek, not doing that. Starting, you know, for tonight, we're not doing that. Our sugya is going to be Boshes. So here's what the Mishnah says about Boshes. Boshes, hakol lefi hamavayesh v'hamisvayesh. Now, the first thing you notice in the Mishnah that's curious is that each of the other chamisha dvarim, the Mishnah clearly spells out how you figure out how you're going to pay the guy back, right? There's a pretty clear explanation for how the tashlum is going to work. Nezek, Eved Nimkar B'Shuk, Refoy, the guy's got a doctor bill, Tsar, Kama Adam Ratzalito, how much would the guy pay to get out? Everything is it's pretty explicit. Boshes is incredibly vague. Hakol, what does that mean? Hakol lefi hamavayesh v'hamisvayesh. So if you look at Rashi, Hakol lefi hamavayesh. So Rashi says, Adam Kal Shabiesh Boshto Meruba. So like someone who's not such a formidable person who embarrasses somebody else. So the Rashi tells you, first of all, in the calculation, the guy who's not very formidable, we consider that a greater boshes if he embarrasses somebody. So somebody who is an Adam Kal, someone in the community who's not such a chashuv person, the scale of boshes halachli is he is capable of producing more boshes. There's an inverse relationship between his chashivas and his ability to produce boshes. So if you get slapped by an ani, that's much more of a halachic busha than if you get slapped by a Talmud Chacham. That's how this is working. Rashi says, Vamizvayish. Adam Chashev Shinizvayish Boshto Maruba. Now it's sort of the opposite. There's a direct correlation between your Chashivas and how much busha you incur. Right? So where the person who bushes you, we evaluate that based sort of in an inverse relationship, where the more kal they are, the more propensity they have to induce the damage of busha, the more chashev you are, the more propensity there is for you to incur it. So it's more embarrassing for a rich guy to get slapped than a poor guy to get slapped, halachli, in terms of the mamon. So Rashi says, V'kulhu chamishi dvar mikra nafka. So each of these five things are midyaraisa we learn. Okay, it's not like we just came up with these and we just ramified nezek into five categories. Midyaraisa, these things come from psukim. Dechsiv, so how do we know nezek? Ayin tachas ayin, right? So the pasuk says ayin tachas ayin, that's how we know nezek. Tsar, petza tachas patza. So the pasuk says petza tachas patza, and the pasuk explains dachi darshin and begemar, that is talking about tsar. Refoy v'sheves, the pasuk says, rak shivto yiten v'rapo yirapa. Boshes dechziv, and here's the boshes one. Boshes, it says, v'kitsusa es kappa. But when a woman embarrasses, we'll take a look at the pasuk eventually, but when the case in the pasuk is, two guys are fighting, and a woman sort of intervenes to protect her husband. And in the process of doing that, there is an embarrassment that is incurred by her intervention. So the pasuk says the lashon of the pasuk ketzu says kappa means like, you know, it's sort of like a Saudi Arabian form of justice, the literal way you'd read the pasuk, that you like chop her hand off. But of course, that, you know, immediately this is mamon, and Rashi proves that this can only be mamon. That's a euphemism for mamon. Okay, so you have the chamishi devarim, and the thing is, so the main point here is to recognize that the Mishnah is incredibly cryptic about how you evaluate boshes, even though it's incredibly explicit about how you evaluate everything else. And that's going to be really important for the sugya. So the sugya starts on Pei Vav Amid Aleph.
I'm just thinking on the Mishnah where it says, you know, for the two parties to the boshes, really, yeah, there's only one person being embarrassed. And yes, to the degree that if there's somebody that has no standing in the community, he comes at you and slaps you in the face, we're saying that's a greater embarrassment. But my question is, isn't it really his embarrassment? At the end of the day, it's not. Yes, of course there's the factor that this guy is nobody and he's coming at you, and it increases your level of boshes. Yeah. But it doesn't seem like it's, in other words, it should only boil down to what, you know, the person.
That's what Rashi is saying. Rashi is saying that you are more embarrassed. It's not saying, he's saying that you are more embarrassed by a more kal guy.
Correct.
Anybody will be more embarrassed the lower the scale.
It really boils down to the level of this guy's embarrassment.
Yeah.
And it's just
that's how they do the Shema.
Like, yeah, but it's not the way the Mishnah says it. It's like two factors.
No. Because it's clear that boshes, you're doing tashlumi boshes for being a chovel. They're talking about you're actually, it's a chovel chavero. You're the chovel. So the chovel is going to pay the guy. So depending on who you are, it enters into the equation, because that impacts how much boshes he experienced.
Correct.
So that's what the Mishnah is saying. It's not saying there's two different shumas. It's one shuma, but there's a dyad, because his embarrassment is dependent on his perception of what happened, which has to do with who you are. Are you guys following? Yeah, you're good? Yeah. Makes sense? I mean, they could have gone either way. The truth is, if Rashi had said the more chashiv somebody is, the more boshes that would have been, the more boshes there exists, you probably would have bought that too. And this is how they're scaling it. You could think into why this is and what you know, but I don't think it's important for tonight. But it would have been believable if you said the more chashiv someone is, the more boshes you incur if they slap you. Here, the more kal, and there's something to that. I don't think it's important, but you have to take it as sort of an axiom for the sugya, but you could think into it if you want why that is. I'm sure that there have been achronim who comment on why it goes in that direction. So our sugya really starts on Pei Vav Amud Aleph. So the Gemara says, Boshes hakol lefi hamavayesh vahamisvayesh. Everybody see it? About halfway down?
Yeah.
Okay. Mani Masnisen. So they want to know, who is the Tana of this Mishnah that says hakol, that uses this hakol lefi hamavayesh vahamisvayesh, that we go by these two parties together? It seems like it's a very continuous scale. There's no fixed rate for this. Mani Masnisen. Lo Rebbe Meir, v'lo Rebbe Yehuda, ela Rebbe Shimon. So why? So they comes right out and says, we can rule out a couple possibilities for who the Tana of the Mishnah is. So it says, we rule out two possibilities for who the Tana could be. Can't be Rebbe Meir and it can't be Rebbe Yehuda. We're on Pei Vav Amud Aleph, about halfway down. We just started the Boshes HaKol Lefi HaMavayesh VaMisvayesh. Mani Masnisen. Lo Rebbe Meir, v'lo Rebbe Yehuda, ela Rebbe Shimon hi. So why? So it can't be any of the other two guys. It has to be Rebbe Shimon. Why? Ditnan v'kulan roon osan ki'ilu hem b'nei chorin shiyardu minachsehem. So, I'm sorry. Shiyardu minachsehem shem b'nei Avram Yitzhak v'Yaakov divrei Rebbe Meir. Because we know that Rebbe Meir holds that by Boshes. And we're going to see this when we do the Mishnah, which the Mishnah, I believe, is on Pei, or is it on Sadi? The Mishnah that this is talking about. It's on Sadi Amud Aleph at the bottom. Sadi Amud Beis. But this goes according to the Shita. So Rebbe Meir holds that you look at everybody that when you evaluate Boshes, you look at everybody sort of the same. How do you look at them? You look at everybody as if ki'ilu hem b'nei chorin, they're everybody is an average type of a guy. This is sort of idiomatic. Shiyardu minachsehem, they were at one time an asher, they one time had money, and they lost that money. So you look at everybody as if they have a certain amount of dignity. They're not the richest person, right? But they're someone that knows what it is to be embarrassed. They had money, and they lost money. But everybody is sort of the same in that. So Rebbe Meir holds that everybody is sort of, Aniyim included. It doesn't matter if you're rich or you're poor. Everyone is Avram Yitzchak Yaakov. Everyone is B'nai Chorin. Everyone is, but Shiyardu Minachsehem. These are people that were, and there's, you know, why they had to be Yardu Minachsehem, why that idiomatically is expressed that way. Because they're sensitive to Boshes. They're not people that have been undignified. They're people that have had levels of dignity where they appreciate what it is to be embarrassed. But everybody is the same. So according to Rebbe Meir, the Mishnah can't go like him. Because according to Rebbe Meir, everybody gets paid the same for Boshes. There isn't a scale of Mevayesh VaMisvayesh. Everybody who gets embarrassed is considered as if they're the same person. Okay, we don't evaluate the Misvayesh. So that rules out Rebbe Meir as a Tana for the Mishnah. Rebbe Yehuda Omer, HaGodol Lefi Godlo, VaKatn Lefi Katno. So Rebbe Yehuda kind of sounds pretty similar to the Mishnah, right? He says, the gadol like his godless, and the katan like his, you know, meaning, if you think of that in terms of gadol menachosim, it's like the wealthy person by his wealth, or the individual according to his greatness, or his smallness in the community, or whatever it means. That's how we evaluate Boshes. That sounds pretty consistent with the Mishnah. So it's not clear from that why Rebbe Yehuda can't be a Tana. So then the Gemara says, I just lost the place. Rabbi Shimon Omer, he says, Ashirim rono son ki'ilu hem b'nei chorin shiyardu menechsehem aniyim kepechusim shebehem. He has a very unusual position. He agrees with Rabbi Meir that we look at everybody sort of the same, except for aniyim. Aniyim, we don't evaluate as if they are... We don't, like, Rebbe Meir's position was, you look at the Aniyim the same way you look at everyone else. They're B'nai Chorin, Shiyardu Minachsehem. Rebbe Shimon says, no, you look at the Aniyim, you sort of round them down. You look at them as P'chusim Shebehem, your Makel, and say that these people, you don't raise them up to the level of everybody else. You basically are Makel, and you round them down to say they're as if they're the most impoverished person. So he says he agrees with Rabbi Meir that Yardu, that we Rono Sankilu Yardu, but the Aniyim we round down, which is a very unusual kind of a position. We'll have to, you know, when we start to unpack this, we'll get a better idea of what Rabbi Shimon is holding from Rashi. So then the Gemara says,
by the way, the middle sheet, that doesn't sound like it's necessarily in line with the Tanakh, because again, the
Rabbi Yehuda?
Whoever it was.
Yeah. A Gadol of Hikano, yes.
Because that's just insofar as him. So if you had a...
Well, you don't know what that means. You don't know if he means the Mevayish also.
Taking it at face value.
All right. But let's wait until we see the Rashis. All right, so maybe let's do some Rashis. So Rashi says, V'chulin, he says, V'chulin aniyim v'ashirim, everybody. The aniyim and the ashirim, there's no difference in terms of Rebbe Meir Shita. All of them are brought up to the same place. Rono-san. Even the rich people, we drop them down. We look at them as if they are yared minichsehem, even if they have a lot of money. So why keilu yared? So here's the Rashi. He says ve'ein shaman es ha'ani lefi anyoso lahakel velo es ha'asher lefi ashro shari ein ledumei bashto sof elachun shavan bekach. So he says that we don't look, we don't evaluate the usher in terms of how much money, how wealthy he is, and we don't evaluate the ani in terms of how poor he is. But they're all the same. We look at them the same. So the first question is, what does he mean, ein l'dame bashto sof? He says, right, there's no end to the dame, to the money of the boshes. We'll come back to that. All right, so but that's Rabbi Meir. So Rabbi Shimon, kepechusa shebehen, it says, pechusim shebe'aniyim, that the most impoverished aniyim is how you look at every ani, lahakel, to be makel on the mazik, on the chovo. The kevin de anihu, boshto kala. Because he's poor, his boshes is very little. So we're just makel on the chovel, and you don't have to pay the ani basically anything for boshes, according to him. Everybody else, you end up paying sort of a benini amount. An amount of a dignified average person, right? Rabbi Shimon agrees with that, but he says, however, if the aniyim we round down, we'll have to get back to that shita. Now, he doesn't say anything about what Rabbi Yehuda's shita is, but all we know is it's lefi gadlo, lefi katno. It just goes by the either way, it goes by some value of godless, some value, some structure that has to do with the cheshivas of the people. So then the Gemara says, so now the Gemara is going to explain. Mani. E Rebbe Meir, if you want to say that the mission is Rebbe Meir, mas nisin ketani hakol lefi amavayish v'amizvayish. Our Mishnah says that this thing is a continuous moving variable, that it goes according to the person that does the boshis and the person that's embarrassed. V'Rebbe Meir, kulu bahadi adadi ninu. Rebbe Meir holds that everybody is the same. V'i Rabbi Yehuda mas nisin ketani hamavayish esesuma chayev. We learn that if you're mavayish the suma, you're chayev. Okay, we hold that if you're mavayish the suma, if you embarrass a blind person, you're chayev. V'ilu Rabbi Yehuda omer suma ain lo boshes. Rabbi Yehuda holds that a suma has no boshes, so he can't be the Tana, because he can't be the guy that says that you have to pay the suma if he holds they have no boshes. Allah, Rabbi Shimon, so it's Rabbi Shimon, makes sense. Afilu tema Rabbi Yehuda, so even if you want to say it's Rabbi Yehuda who says it's Suma ain't lo boshes, ki amar Rabbi Yehuda Suma ain't lo boshes, le mishkel mine, aval le meisva le, yavinan le. When we say that a Suma has no boshes, that means to take money from the Suma when he is mevayish someone else. But to pay the Suma, maybe you do pay the Suma, so we could work it out like Rav Yehuda. V'ha midiktani seifa hamavayish ez yashen chayev v'yashen shebi'esh potter. But it doesn't really work for Rav Yehuda either, Because by a yashen, the Gemara uses a double lashon. It says, where you are mevayish the yashen, your chayav, and yashen shabiyash is potter, meaning when there's a dichotomy, the Mishnah explicitly lists it, v'loktani suma shabiyash potter. But it doesn't say that suma shabiyash is potter. So that distinction of, we only worry about taking from the suma and not giving to him, can't be true. Michla de loshon ha'achi v'loshon ha'achi. So you see, the Mishnah doesn't care about that. So the Gemara says, Ella mechvarta masnisin Rabbi Shimon hi. So it's clear that the Mishnah is going to Rabbi Shimon. Okay. So lots of that is just who's the town of the Mishnah. So what's our what do we try to do with the sugya here? What do we make of this? How do we have a three-way machlokas, right? You have a three-way machlokas. You have a machlokas, Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Shimon, and Rabbi Yehuda. Who is the Tana of the Mishnah? So you have one Shita that holds that everybody for Boshas gets paid the same, right? That everybody is on the same level for Boshas. Every person, doesn't matter what your background is, doesn't matter your social standing, everybody's the same. You have another Shita that holds that we have this, without a lot of information, a very continuous scale. Gadol lefi gadlo, katan lefi katno, and you have another shita that holds that you pay everybody the same except for a niyam. Okay, so you have three shitas. You pay everybody the same except for a niyam. That was the Rabbi Shimon shita that holds that everybody is a niyam.
Poor people.
Okay. So when you see a machlokas like this, how do you typically approach a three-way machlokas? What's the typical methodology for a three-way machlokas? Right. So it's usually one machlokas with a side machlokas, right? There's a major machlokas, and then there's a side machlokas. Now, parenthetically, it happens to be, because I don't want you, you know, to look into this and feel like we were led astray here. In the Dibros Moshe, Rav Moshe holds that this is an exception, sort of. Rav Moshe explicitly learns this particular sugya as a machlokas tanoim with three completely different shitas about how boshas works. And he proposes the three shitas, and then he tests them, and in typical Dibros Moshe style, he really does believe that there are three completely different shitas here. So I don't personally, I mean, it's a lovely, we can talk about at the end how he defined each shita. I can tell you at the end today if you want to know how he defined the shitas. But I don't think it works in terms of the way that the facts of the sugya are laid out here. I actually think that this works better to learn it as one machlokas with a side machlokas. But I can tell you about how Rav Moshe learns at the end, or if you want to look at the Dibros, you could. But just so that you don't think that you don't have to be married to the one machlokas and a side machlokas. But if you are going to set this up as one machlokas, so the usual way to do that is to find the two positions that you think are the polar opposites and anchor the poles with those two positions, explain that machlokas, and then define the side machlokas. Does that make sense? Am I speaking in a language everybody understands? Are you good? You came from Migdal, is that right? So this is not new to you, this whole thing. Okay. All right. So if that is the methodology, so then what do we think about who are the two poles of the machlokas tanoim here? Who would we anchor as the two poles?
Just factually, with the Shimon thing, he's the one that said that you treat any differently.
Yes.
You treat everyone else the same.
Yes.
So why, in other words, how is that still in line with what the Mishnah says?
Because the Mishnah... Okay. We'll get to that. So how is it hakol lefi hamevayish v'hamisvayish? That's a good question. And let's leave that for part of... Let's hold that in abeyance for a second.
There's four things.
Huh?
It sounds like there's four...
Well, we're trying to understand the machlokas tanoim now. How Rabbi Shimon is the best person and not Rabbi... I mean, when you read it, Rabbi Yehuda clearly has the language that's the closest to the Mishnah. We've ruled out Rabbi Meir and we've ruled out Rabbi Yehuda because of the Summa issue. So we're left with Rabbi Shimon, who holds HaMevayish VaMisvayish, meaning Aniyam are the wiggle room.
Can't be a fourth, is what you're trying to say.
Can't be a fourth position? No, well, the Gemara says...
Three,
Yeah, and there's Rabbi Shimon, and the Gemara seems to conclude that it's clear that the Tana is Rabbi Shimon. Okay. But that's an outstanding question. But let's hold it. But for now, so who would we make the poles of the argument?
Who says it's social standing?
No. Who Okay, who would be the two poles of the Machlokas? Why would those be the two poles?
Completely subjective, each case versus one case, one universal boshes for every case.
Okay, so I think that's pretty reasonable. So the two positions that are the farthest apart would be Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda. So we were just talking about in a three-way machlokas how you begin the three-way machlokas, and typically. The three-way machlokas is really one machlokas. It's just one machlokas between two people with a sidebar argument. That's typically how it's done. So we were trying to understand what would the main argument be and what would be the side argument. And Ariel, I think, correctly identified that the two poles here would be Rabbi Yehuda, who holds that everything is according to the mivayish and the misvayish. Okay, or at least that's not so clear, but at least according to the range of chashivas of somebody, and Rabbi Meir holds everybody's the same, and then in the middle you sort of have Rabbi Shimon, who says everybody's the same except these people. Okay, so I'll go along with that. So then, if that's the case, so then let's say that's the case. So then let's go back to the Rashi. So Rabbi Yehuda, who is the simpler shita here? Do you think between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda? Rabbi Yehuda's, right? Because Rabbi Yehuda is just, you know, how pretty consistent with the Mishnah. How important is this person? Let's figure out how much you pay. Rabbi Meir holds, what is his shita exactly? Does he hold that you don't really care about how important they are? Not really, because if you look at Rashi, how does Rashi learn Rabbi Yehuda? Ki'ilu yardu. He says, Ve'ein shamanas ani lefi an yuso, lahakel. Huh? Rabbi Meir, yeah, what I say? Rabbi Yehuda? Yeah. Rabbi Meir. So he says, and we don't do the shuma for the ani lefi an yuso, lahakel. Right? So we're not makel on the ani, on the chovel, because this guy's really poor. Ve'loas asher lefi ashro. Shari ein ledmei bashto sof. Now there's the thing there. Right, there's the problem in the whole sugya is right there. Ein l'demei bashto sof. That is obviously the problem. In other words, when you read that, you think Rabbi Meir would have agreed with Rabbi Yehuda, except for what? Ein l'demei bashto sof. Right. So it's sort of an argument of we don't do this other thing because ein l'demei bashto sof. He says so. Everybody is shavin bekach. So then everybody's equal. All right. So what does that mean? So let's take a look at Tosfos. Ki ilu hen b'nei chorin sh'yardu m'nechseihem. Ki yesh ashirim sh'ein mizvayishim yoser m'b'nei chorin sh'yardu. So you have rich people that are more humble and don't have dignity, don't have a sensitivity to embarrassment beyond regular blue-collar type of guys. And you have a neem also that the implication here in the other direction have as much boshas as b'nei chorin sh'yardu, right? So you have rich people on one side that are a little bit more humble, and you have a neem that are plenty dignified. That seems pretty reasonable. V'ein yachul nadaktik aleihem kol kach eze mehen mizvayesh ki'ilu yardu v'eze mizvayesh yoser upachos. He says you can't really figure out who is who in that matrix. Who is the guy who's lots of boshes and who's the guy who has not so much? So then Toso says, "Ubeze matzinu b'masnisin gebei ha'avir taliso uparosh shel isha b'shuk de'ein medaktikin b'davar im hayu sham b'nei adam shiragel es vayish yosur mipneihem." So he says, you see that by the case we'll get to eventually, by the case of an Isha where she has someone yanks off her, right, someone uncovers her hair, there's no consideration given to like We don't try to figure out, well, who was there, who saw, how chashuv were the spectators. Because you can't really figure that out. So Tosfos is saying that you see that it's, you can't really include ingredients in these situations of identifying exactly how much boshes there is. The implication is, therefore, ki'ilu hen b'nei choron shiyardu, done, kulin shavan, everybody's shavan b'kach, everybody's the same. Now, if you take a look at most achronim, and if you take a look at the Meiri, you will find that most of them hold that when Rashi says, ein l'demei bashto sof, he means something different than what I think the Rashi means. But let's talk about what the possibilities are for what Rashi could mean here. Ein l'demei bashto sof, meaning what? What do we think that means?
So dignified, nothing's going to make up for it.
Ein l'demei bashto, meaning?
Like, there's no money that's going to make up for it. There's no value. It's invaluable. Their pride.
Okay, so you're saying two different things. There's no, so ein l'demei, you can't, you're saying that you can't, ein l'demei bashto sof, you're saying means exactly what? I go, that when you tell me I owe something, how much, I'm the guy they're talking about. If I have ein l'demei bashto sof, that's a problem of I owe what?
Too much.
Too much?
Yeah.
So much that what?
That nothing's going to be able to make up for his embarrassment.
Okay, so like $20 million won't do it?
Exactly, yeah, nothing can do it.
Okay, so that would be a different sheet. So that would be, ein l'demei bashto sof can't mean there's an infinite amount of money that is required for boshes. That, it can't mean that. It can't mean ein l'demei bashto, it can't, it's hard to believe it literally means that there's no amount of money. Because that would seem like, no matter how embarrassed someone is, there has to be some quantity of money that would be a compensation for the, for that, I would think. Fine. But you might say what it means, similar to that, ein l'demei bashto sof, meaning it's so much money, it's not fair to the chovo. Meaning you have some poor guy, it's like kind of like this. You guys know anything about like the Hulk Hogan case? Right? Where there was some, he was photographed or videoed in a compromising situation, and it was determined that the amount of busha that he sustained for that was worth $55 million. So that's ein l'demei bashto sof, in that, if you learn it that way. Because that, like an ani, if the ani was the guy that filmed that, $55 million is a ridiculous, if you really think that this guy, his busha is worth that, then $55 million is just more than can be sustained in a halachic civil system. Because the range of what people could pay, or if you were the guy that photographed Michael Phelps smoking pot, and he lost all his endorsements, right? So there, the demei bashto could be like some crazy amount of money also. So that's ein l'demei bashto sof. Okay, so that's one way to learn ein l'demei bashto sof. That it is some enormous amount of money which we can't really impose. What is the problem with learning that way?
They do impose some number.
Huh?
They do impose some number, it's just the same for everyone.
Well, here he's saying ein l'demei bashto sof, whatever number they would impose, let's say it means it's too much money.
But they are imposing something. It's not like they're not saying that we can't charge with boshes, they're just saying we can't calculate.
I know, but what would be the problem if you learned that ein l'demei bashto sof is the problem?
Why the metric of boshes?
No, meaning if you hold that ein l'demei, if Rebbe Meir's shita is that really boshes is supposed to be this, but we did this instead, okay? And you learn that the thing that it was supposed to be is this ein l'demei bashto sof, which is some supernumerary amount of money, right? Then the problem with that is you're going to have a hard time with the machlokas understanding what the other position is. If the shita is this creates a supernumerary amount of money, and Rabbi Yehuda holds that we absolutely do charge l'fi gadlo or l'fi katno, unless there's a totally different notion of what that is, then you have one person saying you pay the ridiculous amount of money, and another person saying you don't. That to me is a tougher way to learn the machlokas, whether, yeah, you pay, we sustain this $40 million thing so much that you had to change what is the shuma, what is the ideal shuma, into a non-ideal form, and the other sheet that holds you just pay that ridiculous amount of money. That to me is that's a tough machlokas. Mm-hmm. Is there any way to learn ein l'demei bashto sof that will make that a more comfortable, an easier way to learn the machlokas of what Ein L'Dmei Bash Tosof means.
Just to clarify, what's that? What's Rashi's comment going on? Ein L'Dmei Bash Tosof?
He's saying this is why Rabbi Meir holds that you can't have Lefi Ashro as a way to do the Shuma. You can't go Lefi HaMizvayish. You can't go Lefi HaMizvayish, according to Rabbi Meir. This is why Rabbi Meir holds it. You can't go Lefi HaMizvayish. In other words, the whole point of this Gemara is to try to find the guy who holds you go Lefi HaMizvayish. It's Rabbi Yehuda in this Gemara. It just so happens he can't be the Tan of our Mishnah because of his Shita by Asuma. But he is a Lefi HaMizvayish guy. Rabbi Meir is not. And Rashi says the reason Rabbi Meir is not a Lefi HaMizvayish guy is because Ein L'Dmei Bash Tosof. Now the question is, what is the problem of Ein L'Dmei Bash Tosof?
Seems like Boshus is not subject to having precise measurements.
Okay, so what does Ein L'Dmei Bash Tosof mean then? No, the words.
Once you get involved with trying to make a precise estimate, you're not going to, there's always going to be more precision out there to have.
Yeah, I agree with you completely. So this is the argument to the enumerate person who wouldn't see Ein L'Dmei Bash Tosof as an issue of finitude. It's not an issue of magnitude. It's an issue of finitude. You know what I mean? So Ein L'Dmei Bash Tosof means you'll never have whatever it is, a rational number. You'll never have a fixed rational number. There won't be an end to it because you can never really measure it. And that's exactly what Tosos is saying. If you say the other way, Ein L'Dmei Bash Tosof means supernumerary, then number one, you have a machlokas Rashi and Tosos. Because Tosos clearly says that you're Ein Yachol Ledakdik Aleihem Kol Kach Eizem Ehen, right? He clearly says that. To me, he's explaining Rashi's position. If you hold that Ein L'Dmei Bash Tosof, which is the way some Achronim learn, which is a matter of a supernumerary number, then you have Machlokas Rashi and Tosos to begin with. You also then have a problem learning Rabbi Yehuda. But if you say Ein L'Dmei Bash Tosof means a matter of finitude, so then now you have an issue where one shita holds we have no precision, so therefore we do one thing. And the other shita says Lefi Gadlo Lefi Katno. So the question is now, how do we understand that machlokas? And I'll grant you that there's not a lot of information about what Lefi Gadlo Lefi Katno means, except for one thing. What is the one clue that could help you understand Rabbi Yehuda? The one clue that the Gemara brings down in terms of ruling out Rabbi Yehuda as the Tana of the Mishnah, that really is there to teach you what a shita is.
No, he really doesn't hold everyone as according to the Summa
thing. The Summa thing. Right? He also happens to hold Summa Ein Loboshes. Not a huge amount of information.
What's the payment of Boshes going on? The experience of the embarrassment or the adverse effects that result from it?
That this sugya has, there's nothing, there has been nothing declared about that. Do you want to know, like in the end, how does this work?
Yeah.
Okay, there's the interesting thing about Boshes is there is no, there you will not find anywhere where that's explicitly stated. Okay, so in terms of you, and that was the thing, that and that's true of the Mishnah, it's true of the sugyas. The Mishnah, the Mishnah was kind of, the Mishnah prefigured that issue in that the Mishnah was explicit about Nezek, Tsar, Rifoy, Sheves, clearly what they're for. Boshes, nothing. So that is fair game. What Boshes is for is completely fair game. Right? Because it's obviously not in the Mishnah. It's obviously easy. There's a lot of flexibility there.
Even law and also.
Huh?
Even law and also.
Yeah. So I agree with that. So having pointed that out, how would you understand the machlokas? Oh, I didn't even put that on. Okay, so if Boshes is a domain of human suffering, if that's what it is, then we really have no way to assay that. There's no way that we can interrogate and figure out how much human suffering someone has. It's impossible. Ein L'Dmei Bash Tosof, you'll never get it. You can't be medactic in that. Tsar is halacha in it. It's interrogating the pain of an injury. It's halacha in the injury, not in the person. Okay, so that's Rabbi Meir. So Rabbi Meir holds, what do? It's not possible. So, kum sham b'kach, we're done. It's not possible to do this. Even though we want to pay you for your experience, we can't. So we're done. We pay everybody the same. All right, so then where does that leave Rabbi Yehuda? So then according to Rabbi Yehuda, what's Boshes? Because he says, lefi gadlo lefi katno. So what does he hold Boshes as? If it's not a domain of human suffering, what is it? So according to Rabbi Yehuda, boshes is a social injury. It's not a personal experience, meaning everybody, there's a natural hierarchy and there's a natural social domination, subordination that goes with living in a community. That there is a natural social hierarchy in any community, and that has consequence. So that the person that's the most chashuv in the community can leverage that to getting needs met that the person that's the most kal cannot. So the hierarchy really, there is that you do have a social value, an intrinsic social market value. And it turns out that as people, we're very good, our prefrontal cortex has evolved to be very sensitive in terms of social cognition to recognizing what that hierarchy is, even pre-attentively, immediately. So that we human beings are very, very good at recognizing how the hierarchy works very quickly. And it's real. And people, if you interview people and who they think the social ranks are, even in high school or wherever, kids will tell you who the popular people are, and it'll be pretty consistent. Okay? That has to do with the social valence of any individual. Okay, so that everyone has a certain social value. And their social value is, where are they on the social hierarchy? Now, that's not a question of, that's not boshes as a social experience. That's boshes as you're damaging, you're knocking them down a peg in social value. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, this has nothing to do, boshes is not anchored in a domain of suffering. It's anchored in a hierarchy of social value that has to do with where the person stands in the community. If that's true, then it makes sense to say the Summa has no boshes. Because that's not about whether the Summa experiences the pain of embarrassment. That's about, can the Summa go any lower in terms of where he is socially? And the answer is, in that culture, the Summa is already in a completely dependent place. So there is no change in where he stands socially after the Busha. So that's what he means by Ein Lo Boshes. Yeah.
So we're not saying that like someone who is higher social standing, so he'll experience the emotional embarrassment, the pain on a more intense level.
We're not saying that according to Rabbi Yehuda.
Rabbi
Yehuda doesn't care about that because Boshes has nothing to do with suffering.
So what I'm saying is, he could experience it to the same degree as the poor guy, but he's still getting paid more because of the social.
Okay, so according to Rabbi Yehuda, it doesn't matter. Yes, he could experience it. Anyone could experience it any which way. What matters is what his standing was. Did we take a guy who's a Michael Phelps and embarrass him and knock him down in the Olympic, in the elite athlete world, and make it so that he's regarded as a less important person? Whether Michael Phelps cares or not doesn't matter. What matters what matters is that it's a social injury. And it's a social injury because you're a social persona. The notion here is that we're people with internal experiences, but we're also participants in a community. And within the community, you have a social persona. And that social persona fits into a hierarchy of people. That's natural. There's no way to undo that. That's how human beings operate. So boshes is a facet of chavala that recognizes that within the damage of an assault is not just the fact that you can't work, that you have to pay doctor bills, that there's pain, but that you lose position. That's Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Meir is, boshes is a very unique type of suffering that has to do with your internal perception and your experience of what happened to you, right? Not just the pain of the event. Okay, now given that that's the machlokas, that has implications in terms of summa, and that's why Rabbi Yehuda makes sense. So now that you have the poles of the machlokas, now you have to answer the question, what's the machlokas, Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Shimon, within the boshes being a domain of human suffering? All right.